hoping that the the video has started. I have to remember to start the next video. I just do that right now. Good. It takes about 10 minutes to start to do this. And I just want, sorry, the one who sits, we have the two foreigners sitting in front now. Can you go in and write anything that you discovered? The map? Can you? Good. Right. Go and write three things on the board that you can match. So this is diagram one with diagram two. And diagram two was the SPC model. And this was the model from the textbook. And I'm going to try and get this. You can say your name too. Sorry. Your name? Fabien? We'll write on the board now. He doesn't have a mic, so. You don't have to say it loud yet. You can just write. Right. Take this off. I'm going to take it offline, people, while I connect. Thank you, Fabien. Now, this type of abstract modeling is what this course is about. Because we're giving you abstract models, and you have to go out in reality and use those abstract models. Otherwise, the theory is just is useless. Let's say a model is not right or wrong. It's more or less useful. I haven't looked what Fabien has written. One second. Okay, so. Correct. So I said the first one, owner, potential victim. You see on the right, potential victim. You have the threat agent is the offender. Right? The asset, the victim's data, correct. The countermeasures. The point is, there are many different countermeasures. Like, and that's the thing about social technical ethics, laws, operating system, security mechanisms. In this case, you've seen the model. It talks about mechanical, electrical security mechanisms. Right. And so that's correct. Vulnerabilities? Yeah, I mean, going back to this app, you see here, this one, that modeling starts to break down. Now, you should always look at the entire stack, those barriers, as countermeasures. Right? That's what they are. And those are social countermeasures. So what you can do in the diagram, you can divide up the countermeasures between technical countermeasures and social countermeasures. And what you see sometimes, that every time you implement a technical countermeasure, you can introduce new types of attacks, social attacks. And that's what social technical modeling is about. Every time you do something technically, how does it affect the social controls? Does it eliminate, it might eliminate the technical risk, but does it deal with the social risk? So if we go back to the simple example again about the mobile phone. So what's the countermeasure to the countermeasure? What has Telenor done? Anybody here have Telenor? How do you find out your PUC code? It's a countermeasure. What sort of vulnerability does that, or threat does that introduce? So one countermeasure that was used to protect the device, because we put the other countermeasure online, means that the device countermeasures are useless. Okay. So that's the advantage of modeling. That's why you do the social technical analysis. You see how you do one thing, it creates, solves one problem and might create two problems. And your job as a security person, a consultant, or manager is to explain, we understand this, but sometimes the individuals are just looking for solution. So study this map, think about it, and if you can do this, this is the basic knowledge to pass the course. As I say, it's a thinking course. So when he's talking about history in the textbook, they have different ways of organizing the security problem. So they say you have physical security, you have operational security, you have communication security, network security, database security, and storage security. Now what's interesting, they always make these things a list, and that's the same thing that's being said here, right? This model is trying to contain everything here. Store, process, and communicate. Okay, store, process, collect, and communicate. Why did I have the word collect here? What was the requirement? What was the abstract word we had about collect? So this is really jumping in the first word here. Logs. Why do we collect? We need accounting traceability measures. Why do we need traceability measures? Why do we need forensics? Because we have laws that say that if someone does something, you have to prove that they did it. Right? So this layer here is helping define some of the techniques, the collection techniques here. So the model is always connected. Every time you do something here, you have to figure out this storage. How does it work with the application? How does it work with the operating system? How does it work with the hardware? 1980, 9, I did this fun attack on Word. And just giving as an anecdote here, is that in 1989, I don't know what's happening now, on the hard disk, the way Word was designed, well, thank you, Fabian. Sorry for erasing. It was a good job. He's got good writing. So this is a hard disk. This is the application. So I was doing some stuff, looking at the hard disk, and I'm not an application expert, but I looked at it, and Word stored the font information for a file in one sector, always, in this version, I even forget the version, and it stored the text in another file. So the font information about this text were a type of link list. So when you go on a Word document, you know, you have these characters here, that little symbol, if you go on hiding it. This symbol here, for some reason, is stored in another sector. That was in I have. Now, what was interesting, if you have a document now, this is to explaining this whole business about hardware, collection, storage, and is that if I had a document that was classified as top secret, and it's coming up on your screen. It's hard, before we used to write screens this way, this is your monitor, right? It's coming off the hard disk onto your monitor. So the attack I did, which was quite interesting, it was a simple type of attack that I found out for some reason too, this might have changed again, that the font bit, so if I had put top secret on the top and this is font 20, right? So when you open up a document on your screen, it says top secret and you're reading the document. If I flipped this bit, it would become a negative font. I mean, if I flipped one bit, I'm not talking about a byte. If I flipped one bit, the way Word was designed, it would make that into a negative font. So all I had to do for this page is go in, find where the link list was, flip one bit, and when you brought up this document on the screen, you didn't see the word top secret. It was there, but you didn't see it. What has this got to do with the SBC model? Well, if I went to a court case at that time, I said, okay, especially the hard disk, what is the error rate of a hard disk? What is the likelihood that it can make an error on one bit? We had the statistics for that. So maybe out of 10,000 reads, I forget now, one bit could flip. So can you prove beyond a shadow of the doubt that my client didn't have that? Is there any reasonable doubt that maybe that bit flipped? We're talking about one bit. So that's an example how you can connect the law here with the hardware, with the application, to the storage, and do an attack on the system. I didn't leak a top secret document. It didn't say top secret. Now, what are the countermeasures against that? Security experts, what's a countermeasure against that? Correct. And that checksum has to be administered by a cryptographic key. Or the checksum could be done anyways, but it has to be protected by it, because I could flip the bit and change the checksum, right? So it's a cryptographic checksum. And how do I get the key to do that? Who distributes the key to have the cryptographic checksum? So I'm mitigating and transferring the risk to another application. Right? That's the job. We keep moving types of attacks, and we say, okay, now, if I have the administrator password, can I get in there and do that? Yes. Because the administrator at that time was the one that assigned it. And that has to do with the way I just modeled there, right? So we had the countermeasure. In this case, the countermeasure, it creates a vulnerability. So we had the checksum, CRC, cryptographic checksum, so the file here has this, has the checksum there. I check the checksum. Has the checksum been modified? Yes. Don't show the document. Right? That has to be built into the application if it's been modified, because what happens, sometimes they put the checksum in, but it doesn't restrict showing the document. Right? So if the checksum has been modified, you don't show the document. Now, what's the vulnerability then? If I have this control now, there has to be an application to hand out access control. There has to be authentication. So this is Stuart. He has crypto key X. How did I get crypto key X? So if I want to attack the system now, it's created a vulnerability, and the vulnerability, I'm going to have to attack the countermeasure. I'm going to have to attack the countermeasure and get control of the access control system. Good. So we make sure that there's a checksum in the access control system so I know it's been compromised. All right. What happens if I'm super user? I can take over the operating system. You see, again, I'm moving up. So we started off with hardware. We had the application. Now we're saying everything's dependent on the security of the operating system. And that's the way, going back to this model of abstract systems, this is what you have to have in your head all the time. You have these different layers. You have to look at different security systems at different layers in the access tree. And then how are these layers related? Ideally, what's supposed to happen with this model, the reason it's designed this way, is that I shouldn't have to know about digital logic layers to program in conventional programming languages. So there's supposed to be the abstraction. One abstraction layer here does not have to know about anything of the abstraction layer there when you're programming. As a programmer, you're not programmers. You're security experts. You have to understand that any security problem can occur at this layer, this layer, this layer, this layer, this layer, this layer. I think I will put that reference in. Going back to this different layers. So the largest explosion in Russia besides a nuclear explosion was caused by this layer, the digital logic layer. The Americans had, and I can give you the reference to this, it's been public now, the Americans had found out that the Russians were stealing chip technology. So they put in the digital logical layer a loop that after so many things it would not function. This chip wound up controlling a natural gas pipeline. Boom. The Americans admitted to it too. And this reference, I give you the reference. I didn't think about it now, but I give you the reference if you want. Are you interested in finding out the reference? Okay. It's from 1983, I believe. It takes that long for the real security reasons to come out. And the reason I'm saying this is not to make you paranoid and go into conspiracy theory. I'm saying, as security experts, you have to think about security systems in these different layers of abstraction. Obviously, it's not that easy to attack something at the digital logical layer. Does the enemy, the threat agent, have the resources to do that? And what will the enemy do? They will take the path of least resistance as a whole. But you have to consider that, because they're a living system too. All right, so that was that exercise. So you see how the model here, the abstract model, this is an abstract model. This is a bit more concrete a model, but still abstraction. And then they have this way of classifying information, physical security, operation security, etc. So now we're getting more concrete, we're getting more practical. So you usually have that in an organization. You have someone in charge of physical security. You have someone in charge of database security, storage security. So here's another example of, this is the NSA model of security. They have these diagrams, it's called confidentiality, integrity, availability. I don't know why. Academically, they're on a line. They should not be, since they're not exactly... I don't know if there's no layers there, but they talk about storage, processes, and transmission, policy, education. So you see here, this is the model, right? And this is a cube. So they tried to present information security management like a Rubik's cube. Right? I think this model is too complicated. They think this model is too simple. But they hired Edward Snowden, so who's right? So, checklist. So this is from the first chapter. So you see here, they have this checklist all the time, and threat methods and attacks identified, yes or no. Threat attack vectors identified, organization information assets evaluated for threat attack vectors. What did I ask you to do in the exercise? I asked you to talk to the owners and say, what is your information assets? Your job is to understand the methods of attack and what are the threat vectors on those assets. Chapter 2 talks about and makes list of tons of different types of categories of threats. And you can read about them. Actually, on Thursday, I'm going to Finland to talk about industrial espionage, social technical modeling, industrial espionage. And when I come back, I can share you some of the slides there. It's all public. Sabotage, threats, software threats, forces of nature, etc. So you can, when you read the chapter, I want you to read it, understand how the practitioners talk about these lists. But I want you to think at how many of these threats are social, technical in nature. Don't forget that these individuals, when they're modeling security, they're not modeling it from a social technical perspective. They have these different models. They have a Rubik's Cube, and they have this abstract model. Again, a model's not right or wrong. It's more or less useful. What's interesting about Chapter 3 now is that they list the types of attacks, and then they suggest controls. So, Fabienne shared with us a way of dealing with malicious code. What was that measure? It's tough to say malicious code. Theoretically, malicious code, how do we deal with virus attacks today? Technically. So in one of the lectures, and you should watch that, if you go back to this now, we made these videos. Where is it now? This is a video about Louise Engstrom and myself discussing how we should teach. It's 10 minutes, so, I mean. So please take the time to watch it. Now, Louise is a theoretician, and they say I come from, in a sense, both worlds, but I started off as a practitioner. We talked about an information systems concept called, in lecture three, called requisite variety. So here, we have a problem in practice, information systems, detecting viruses, detecting malicious code. How technologically do we detect viruses? What do? We find viruses' fingerprints. We find their checksum, so to speak, right? So we do a checksum on known viruses. So we have known viruses, and they produce checksums of them. A technical control. A checksum is a technical control, we say that. Now, what is the problem in terms of requisite variety? How would you put up detecting a virus with the law of requisite variety? The law of requisite variety said that only variety can absorb variety. If I'm going to control a system, so this is system the control system, and it wants to detect a virus, it has to have enough variety to match every known virus. Right? What is going to do with unknown viruses? Right? So the control system, requisite variety, tells us that if you want to have a virus control system, you have to have enough variety in the control system as there is in the attacking system. The difference between those two is a social technical risk. Now, why is it a social technical risk? First, it's a risk. We won't call it social technical yet. But go back to this diagram. We have installed an application that checks, that can check and has enough variety to detect 95% of the known viruses. Right? Good. So we have requisite variety there at the technical level. The operational level, do we require users to install a virus filter? No. So that's nice technical control, unless we have a correct social control, is useless. Well, not useless, but it's there. So we have to have, one, a procedure to do that, right? We have to have policies to do that. In the physical control system, when I was security manager at Ericsson, in Sweden, they have a law. You give employees a key, a physical key. If they lose that key and have been careless with that key, in the employment contract, I could actually make them pay for changing all the locks in the building, if you read the fine print. That was a policy thing that we implemented, a legal thing, and of course it had to do with labor law, etc. Can you do that? And this is a tip, whatever. So the way the law is written is if you have been careless. So if you go to a place and you have the key, you lose the key, and then you say, I've been pickpocketed. Who has the burden of proof? All depends on the policy, the laws here, how that policy will work. So for example now, in the Russian spy case we had at Ericsson, the employee didn't change his password. Could we take him to court for industrial espionage because he didn't change his password? No, because the policy not necessarily said that all individuals change the password correctly. If you choose a weak password and someone breaks in, can I take the employee to court? So I have great password policies here, right? But do I have the law? Is the law there that will help me use that? No. So what happens, what's interesting here, when you're looking at their different attacks, they will suggest countermeasures, and you're, after taking this course, you should be able to suggest social technical countermeasures. That's a measures where the social controls are related to the technical controls. For example, how do you detect sniffers? You know what sniffers? Protocol sniffers? Do we allow students to use sniffers here? No. No. Is it a good idea not to have laws against it? As an example, right? No, I'm saying I won't get into particulars. I'm not. I'm just giving a lot of people when I give these examples. I'm saying, okay, as a security manager here now, when you're doing the exam, okay, the sniffer one. How would you deal with a sniffer in an organization? One, you might have a policy saying you're not allowed to use a sniffer. That's fine. Do you have the technology to detect a sniffer? So the policy is useless. That's an example of a social technical countermeasure. And the way it usually works in practice, and that's what you see all the time, is these guys, in their thing, they've listed a bunch of good technical ways, but they haven't thought from a social technical system. All right, policy, no sniffers. Well, how do you know someone's using a sniffer? Good example now, I take Norwegian back and forth from Stockholm. It's free Wi-Fi. Should I be allowed to use free Wi-Fi on Norwegian? Okay. These are all issues that if you ever get to be a security manager, you have to deal with. Okay. Now, you could say, install And would it be appropriate now as a social technical measure? We have something, for example, we have on a PC, we have firewalls. Should you have it that the PC, before it goes into a free Wi-Fi, will detect the possibility of a sniffer? And then how do you do that? Okay, so that was chapter 3. So 1, they have the threats. 2, they have the attacks. And then 3, they have the suggestion for countermeasures. So when you get in chapter 4, they talk about security policy. So one of the troubles that's very difficult to teach security policy is I have to turn a bunch of computer science and engineering people into lawyers. But that's part of the game. So they start off with having a statement of values, mission statements, vision statements, and they talk about security life cycles. How do you do investigations in your organizations, analysis, design, etc. That's an example of chapter 4. We won't get in too much into policies here. Again, this is a learning type exercise. As I say, the reason I took this book is it's very practical. And the other side, the other material I gave in the beginning, was in a sense quite theoretical. And I want you to be able to jump between the practical and the theoretical. And your ability to jump and find the relationships is what you'd be testing on. I can give you a theoretical thing and say, give me a practical thing. I give you a practical thing, can you give me a theoretical thing? How are we doing for time now? I think I stop at 3. Yeah. So again, if you want at home, those are online, whatever, go through this exercise, look at this picture, the way they talk about how you organize internal monitoring, external monitoring, planning and risk assessment, vulnerability assessment, and the SBC model. Now, there are things that are different and similar. I want you to be able to compare and contrast. And to say they're not all the time 100% matching. I'm not asking you to find where everything fits. I just want you to be able to have the ability to jump from this side, which is the theoretical side, to the practical side, and be able to jump from the practical side to the theoretical side. So this is the next teaching learning activity. You guys didn't really work together, did you? You can help each, I don't know, you can go for a coffee together or something, but that's chapter 6 talks about information security management in general, and in particular, where should it be placed in an organization? Should it be placed in the IT department? The security department, administration, insurance and risk management, the staff, that's the HR type of thing, the legal department. I would like you to reflect using some of the, to get an A in this course, whatever, I'd like to. How would you use the law of requisite variety to justify the placement of information security management? How would you use the law of requisite variety to justify and analyze the placement of information security management in an organization? Remember what requisite variety was. What the law says is that in order for the control system to control something, if the system I'm controlling, this is the system 1, and it's being controlled by system 10. This system can produce 30 states. How many states can the control system measure? If it can produce 31, then it has 100% control over this system, theoretically. If it can only produce or monitor and measure 20, and that's the risk we're taking, right? So going back to this diagram here, this is the security controls. In this case, we say there's 30. And this is the risk. This is risk 20. So what this diagram is saying is I can't produce any. This is zero. So I have a risk of 30. I'm going down to 20. Right? To understand that relationship. And that's what you're modeling with risk, whatever. But I want you to think about that. How would you use requisite variety to justify the placement of the information security management group? You are five experts now. We just reorganized. Where do you want to sit? And why? Okay, you got 10 minutes to discuss where you want to sit. You don't have to give theoretical explanations, you can give practical explanations why you want to sit there. Do you want to sit in the IT department, the administration, the legal department? And that's at, say we put it this way, that's here. So we just hired you, we need a lot of security at Jurvik. Because, you know, we're setting up this CCIS and we got all these people trying to hack us and all this. You guys are the experts now. Where should we put the security gurus in the Higg administration? Some of you know Higg better than others, how things work here. But no, you don't have to discuss this and give a reason. It's an example of an exam question. So I'm just helping you prepare for the exam question. All right. I'll be back, I think, in 10 after. So you have 15 minutes. Where do you want to be? We have some people in the IT department. Is it a good place to be? But remember, get the textbook and start reading. The chapters are listed. But reading just to know. It's reading to say, okay, this is a theoretical. Explain to me how they're related. Otherwise, the theory is just going to go in one ear and go out the other. You know what requisite variety is, right? It makes sense, but then how do you apply it? I mean, it's not easy.